Thanks for joining me today. You're listening to It's All About Food. That's what you want to listen to, right? I hope so. We get to talk about food, my favorite subject, the good, the not so good, the delicious, and a lot more. I wanted to just bring up a few things before we get to the meat of the program. And you know, I hope, that we're having our fundraiser, Responsible Eating and Living, my nonprofit, is having a fundraiser on Earth Day, my birthday, and I want all of you to be there. So all you have to do is go to responsibleeatingandliving.com and scroll down the right side, and you'll see a link to our Happy Earth Day review, the Happy Earth Day review. There's going to be lots of great vegan food and drinks and a performance by the Swinging Gourmets. It's going to be a lot of fun. And if you go to that page, the event page, you can watch some promos for it, which I think are a lot of fun, too. So I hope you do that. And I wanted to mention also that we have some great auction and gift bag sponsors, and more are joining in the fun. Catskill Animal Sanctuary is giving a night at their homestead, which is a lovely, lovely house in the Catskills. And you can visit their sanctuary. Guyam TV is offering a subscription to their online video programs. Go Organic NYC, which is a company that I just started using recently. It's an organic delivery food service, and they're giving two $100 gift certificates in our auction. World Peas, that's World Peas, P-E-A-S. They have some fun snack foods. They're giving a gift basket. Sarah Salon is giving a manicure in their for our auction. And we've got some great treats for our gift bag, including Guardian coupons and Raw Revolution bars, Bean Field, their chips made from beans. And Ben Bella is including a certificate for a free download to their book, Best of Plant-Based Eating and Living. And there's a lot more that I'll mention in other programs. So I hope you make it, okay, because it's going to be a lot of fun, and it's my birthday. And I want to have a nice party with all of you. Let's move on to my first guest, David Komen-Heide. He's the executive director of the Humane League. Under his leadership, the Humane League has grown into a national presence with offices spanning from coast to coast, winning campaigns against some of the largest food service and retail corporations in the world, and reaching millions of young people each year with a message of compassion for farmed animals. During David's tenure, the Humane League has been ranked as best in America by the Independent Charities of America, and named a top charity by the Charity Navigator Animal Charity Evaluators for three consecutive years. David, how are you doing today?
Hey, good. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
You're welcome. So you're 25 years old.
That's right, yes.
Yes, and you're just a young Superman, aren't you?
I don't know if that's how I describe myself, but very kind of you. I mean, I've got to say we have a really exceptional group of people at the Humane League who've helped us grow, and many of them are very young, including our Philadelphia director is 22 years old, I believe, and she's responsible for Philadelphia Meatless Mondays. Our newest campaign coordinator, Taylor, is 21 years old, and he's behind some of our biggest corporate victories yet. So I'm like the old man in the group now.
That's exciting. All right. So give me a brief history on the Humane League, how it got started.
Sure. So the Humane League was started actually a decade ago by my friend Nick Cooney, who some of your listeners may know from some of his books. And for a long time, it was just Nick doing by himself with volunteers, kind of like local grassroots organizing, so things like leafleting and doing local campus campaigns, setting up news racks with vegetarian starter kits, just trying to pick out some of the most effective tactics that local volunteers can use. And after a few years, he raised enough money to hire one other person to do that same kind of work in Boston. So that's when I got started, and that was nearly 5 years ago. So for a little while, it was Nick in Philly, me in Boston, and we added on our friend Aaron Roth in Baltimore area and his partner Kate. Since then we kind of took that franchise model of opening up local offices, and by the end of the spring we'll have 11 different major metro areas with our folks, as well as a number of full-time corporate campaigners on staff as well. So, yeah, we do a mix of kind of like the grassroots outreach, like leafleting on campuses, organizing student groups, setting up news racks, running local campaigns, like getting school systems to participate in Meatless Mondays. And then kind of the other part of our work is our national campaigns. So that's where we get major corporations to change their policies. And those campaigns are supported by the network of volunteers that we have through our grassroots offices.
Okay, and you recently moved to New York.
That's right, yeah. I've been here for about 4 or 5 months now. It's been real exciting. It's such a great animal community here. I'm still getting to know everyone. But, yeah, it's been a lot of fun living in Brooklyn.
Do you have some specific targeted plans, the reason why you came to New York, other than we're the greatest city in the world?
Well, I must admit, my partner got a job here. It's the main reason, but I have my eye on New York for a little while. Right now, it's myself and one of our full-time campaigners are both living here, and we work on a lot of our national campaigns out of the city. So our work from New York has been mostly nationally focused, but we are hoping down the line to hire someone to do the kind of grassroots local work that we really think would be great to see more of in the city. We see that, you know, Vegan Outreach is doing a great job of leafleting and hitting up college campuses, but there's simply so many people here that really there could be, you know, a dozen more full-time staff people, I think, working in the city. So we definitely want to start expanding our grassroots presence here in the near future.
And what is the mission of the Humane League?
Well, our mission is to, simply put, reduce as much suffering as we possibly can. So whether that is creating more vegetarians and vegans, getting people to reduce meat consumption so that animals aren't born into factory farms, or changing the policies at companies so that the worst abuses on factory farms are kind of phased out, and of course there's a cost increase that reduces kind of the bulk production of these products, you know, whatever means we can find to be most effective to reduce suffering and spare as many animal lives as we can.
The word humane is an interesting one,
mm-hmm.
And it's a word that bothers me very often because I think we all know what humane really means.
Sure. Yep.
And we use it a lot for things that aren't humane. I know mm-hmm. the Humane League is doing things to promote the real meaning of humane.
But, yeah. I mean, part of the reason that we like that name is that it has that kind of mainstream appeal, where because everyone thinks of themselves as humane. We also work with a lot of corporations where, you know, if we have the word vegan or something like that in our name, it might be a lot more difficult to get kind of public traction.
Mm-hmm.
But we are very careful with our language. We never talk about, like, for example, we, you know, work with companies to ban or to boycott farms that use gestation crates or farms that use battery cages and so forth. And we're very careful with our language. We never say that, like, oh, now they'll be using a humane egg farm or they're using a good egg farm. We always talk about things in terms of boycotting, talking about the cruelty of certain practices, highlighting their cruelty. So we always talk in the negative about that kind of thing. I completely agree. I hate to see press releases that come out and talk about, you know, humane meat and humane eggs and so on. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, exactly. Humane farming, which involves things that aren't humane. Yeah. Now, what are some of the winning campaigns that you've had that I read about in your bio?
Sure. So in the last few months, we've actually had a pretty really big winning streak for our corporate campaigners, which has been exciting. So just to give some perspective, like I said, 4 or 5 years ago, there was a few of us just working in our local areas, and we do things like on college campuses to get their dining halls to add more vegan options, to get dining halls to boycott battery cage eggs and so on. So we kind of go campus to campus. When I started in Boston, for example, some of the first campaigns I did was to get a battery cage boycott on Harvard and BU and most of the campuses in the city, as well as, you know, adding more vegan options in the BU dining hall, that kind of thing. And we've kind of scaled up. We spread to a number of cities, started getting a lot more campuses to switch. And in the last few months, we decided to target the actual major dining companies that actually control all of the cafeterias. So there's a few. Compass Group, Sodexo, and Aramark are by far the largest. These are these you know, they're billions and billions of dollars, multinational companies that each control hundreds and hundreds of dining halls and accounts at hospitals and colleges and sports arenas. So we launched a national campaign against one of these companies, Sodexo. They're, I believe, an $18 billion company. They have hundreds of campus accounts alone in the country, in the U.S. alone.
Sure.
And we targeted them to make a complete battery cage boycott across all their accounts, both Liquid and Shell Egg. So just to give you an idea of scale, I think Sodexo alone employs, if you will, about one in every 300 hens in the United States that lay eggs. Mm. So it's a really huge purchaser. And the campaign lasted for a little over 2 months. And then they not only agreed to make the boycott, but they also put out a comprehensive animal welfare policy. So they're also going to be, you know, trying to curtail some other practices like tail docking and dehorning without any kind of painkillers, you know, other kind of harm reduction methods that are going to make a meaningful difference for a lot of animals out there. And what's more exciting about that, though, is that within a number of weeks from that victory, we were able to get similar commitments out of Aramark, their competitor, and then Compass Group made the switch, and they're the single largest of these companies. So those three companies alone impact over 3 million hens every year. And, of course, you know, egg-laying hens have about a 12-month life cycle in the industry. So that means every year millions and millions of hens will not have to suffer inside of battery cages. And additionally, of course, you know, it brings the price point of egg replacers a lot closer to eggs themselves, which is, you know, a very exciting thing for those who have an eye on kind of the bulk market. You know, about 30% of eggs are just used as like a binding agent or for some other part of their chemistry that isn't really what you think of when you think about eating eggs. So the real hope is that we can kind of undermine that part of the egg industry with these campaigns.
Are they going to, Sodexo and these other companies, are they making the change immediately or is it by a certain date?
It's a phase out over the next few years. So each company was a little bit different. What we worked with on with some of them was to phase out 100% of their college accounts right now and then phase out the rest. I mean, the fact of the matter is that these egg farms don't even exist yet. Essentially, a lot of battery cage farms are going to have to retrofit. Their demand is so this is increasing the demand by such a huge amount that we're actually starting to see changes in the egg industry where there's going to need to be a change in the kind of farming taking place. So the idea is that the phase-in of these new farms will occur as the transition is happening at these major companies.
Yeah, because I was wondering about the capacity of the way they're doing things now and the way that they're promising to do later, and is the industry set up to handle that?
Yeah, I mean, the major players in the industry were part of the discussions with those companies as they were making the switch, I'd imagine. I mean, they would have to get, they would take a while to get back to us after speaking to their contacts. So it certainly is making waves across the entire industry.
Right, because I've talked to a number of authors who have described what goes on in the industrial factory farmland. Ted Genoways and Chris Leonard both wrote some pretty excellent books and talked about how Tyson, you know, has major control of all the chickens. And I'm sure that they're a part. I'm sure that these companies are getting a lot of their eggs from Tyson. And you know,
I think Tyson is more in control of like the what they call the broiler hen industry.
The meat chicken.
So you know, Henry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, precisely. So I think that there's a number of, I think there's less of a monopoly in the egg world. There's a few really large egg producers, many of which use battery cages now, of course, but who are starting to see kind of the writing on the wall and shift over a lot of their, like retrofit a lot of their other farms.
Right. Well, ultimately we want them to stop making eggs, right, and use plant eggs.
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, I mean, you know, if we look to European countries where laws like this or policies like this have been implemented, we see a number of things happening, you know, because in England, for example, when the price of eggs went up because the battery cage became illegal, what we saw was a lot of fast food restaurants phasing eggs out of their breakfast sandwiches and so on. We also just saw a decline in actual consumption because of the price increase as well as because of the education for consumers. You know, another part of laws has been to include, like, from caged hens on the eggs. themselves, and we see a dip in consumption when things like that happen. But, you know, consumers, when they find out what's happening, are very sympathetic to folks like you and I in our point of view. And I think that campaigns like these not only work financially towards our end goals, but also really raise awareness about where people's food is coming from. You know, a lot of the folks that I talk to on campuses campaigning like this have never really thought about where their food comes from, about the animals who are laying their eggs and so on. And this is a great way to get the kind of gears turning in people's minds, thinking mm-hmm. about, you know, exactly, because it's the kind of, eggs especially, I think, are compelling because the average American eats about one hen's worth of eggs each year. So mm-hmm. if you're, you know, an average American who eats eggs, there's a hen out there laying just for you, and they live for about 12 months. So that means every year you're kind of renewing your lease on this animal in a cage. And mm-hmm. it's a very, I don't know, it's a very kind of, at least to me, a very compelling thing to make people think about is like, is that worth it to you, this one animal out there? It's not, it makes it a lot less abstract.
Okay. You said you've got some people working on Meatless Monday campaigns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, please tell me more.
So, yeah, that's something that we decided to do last year. We saw a lot of success in various cities passing kind of city council resolutions and some schools participating and companies participating. So we thought that we would take our kind of grassroots style and tactics and bring it to the Meatless Monday kind of campaign. And the reason that we decided to do this is that we just looked at the numbers and we saw some of the cities we're in, they're so big that even if we only succeed in one or two, the number of meals impacted will be so large that it's just an unbelievable number of animals would be spared from life on a factory farm if we were able to institute some of these policies. So we had a number of our offices start gathering signatures of students and parents, taking pictures of students, holding signs of support, getting letters written in to the dining folks and the administration at these major public school systems, getting city council resolutions passed. And after a number of months, we actually saw success in Philadelphia. Now the Meatless Monday program and all of their K-12 schools. We got about half the schools in the Baltimore County School District, which is one of the largest in the country. And also mm-hmm. now Boston is participating on a meat reduction day on Mondays. So in total, we're impacting it's over 2 million meals a year, I believe, on Mondays served in those schools that, you know, formerly would have been chicken nuggets or hamburgers or something like that will now be vegetarian options. So we're talking about, you know, countless thousands of animals spared.
The concept of Meatless Monday seems so harmless, and yet on both sides of the Meatless Monday, what do I want to say? There are people who don't like Meatless Mondays because they don't think we should be telling people that they shouldn't eat meat at any time.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the other side where there are some very passionate vegans who think that it's the wrong message, it doesn't go far
mm-hmm.
enough. And what do you think about all of those different voices on
yeah.
Meatless Mondays?
Well, first of all, to me, the bottom line here is that because of these policies, you know, thousands of animals won't have to endure life on a factory farm. So to me, that in itself makes a campaign worth doing, because to me, the bottom line is really how much suffering can be reduced by these campaigns. But that said, it's probably not surprising that I also think these campaigns have a lot of other value. And that is, you know, I think there's a lot of evidence out there that shows that if people take small steps, they're more likely to go in the direction that we want them to and eventually become vegan. Think of it this way. This is kind of, when people bring this up with me, I kind of have this thought experiment where I say you have two worlds. You have one where you just have, you know, you're leafleting to a regular college student. In the other world, it's a college student who K-12 every Monday was told today's a special day where we're going to eat vegetarian food because it's better for the animals and it's better for the environment. And so on, and there's promotions talking about why Meatless Monday is good, which is something that the school systems we're working with are doing. So they've consciously thought about why reducing meat is good for basically their entire lives and made a point to do it. Do you really think that the average college student is more likely to engage with a vegan outreach leaflet or a Mercy for Animals leaflet or something like that than the one who's never thought about these issues before or never been introduced to vegetarian food that they like? I don't think so. I mean, mm-hmm. At least for me, I didn't go vegan overnight. And I, you know, I made a lot of small baby steps when I went vegetarian in high school. First, I did meatless Mondays, and then I did all the weekdays, and I slowly became vegetarian over a number of weeks. So at least for me personally, it really does speak to me. Like, if you show people that vegetarian and vegan food is normal, it's stuff you already eat. You know, we do surveys to follow up with people and say, why did you stop being vegetarian, or why are you not vegetarian? And the main things that people say are like, I don't know what to eat, the food is weird, like none of my friends eat vegetarian food. Mm. These are all problems. These are real problems that have easy solutions. And one of the best things to do is just every week make a point to say, hey, you already eat vegetarian food because this is a vegetarian day, Monday, and you like pasta and red sauce and you like bean burritos and so on. So I think that the people who are really critical of Meatless Mondays, I think it's too much of a focus on purity and, like, wanting everything to be 100% all the time. But, you know, in the real world, you have to work baby steps. Change is gradual. And when, especially, you know, we can't go to the Boston public school system and say, hey, do you want to go 100% vegan, you know?
Yeah.
When it comes to working with major institutions, you have to work with what you can win.
Right. Well, there are organizations that, like the Humane League, that are doing that, and that's a good thing. And then there are others that want to see the big steps. And I guess it's like a continuum, and we need everyone on that continuum mm-hmm. doing their part so that we can move
sure.
the average over to a better place.
Absolutely, yeah. Oh, and the other thing to keep in mind is, like, the Humane League, probably 95% of our resources
yeah.
are spent on doing vegan advocacy. We
mm-hmm.
talk directly to consumers and ask them to go vegan. So I think that makes a lot of sense when you're talking to the average person. That's like it's not a completely impossible thing to ask. But obviously, you know, if we go to Starbucks, we can't just say, hey, have you guys thought about going 100% vegan?
Right. Now, you mentioned you started going vegetarian in high school. What did it for you? What planted the seed?
I wish I had a better excuse, but the fact of the matter is that I had a vegetarian girlfriend. Who was a good friend before she was my girlfriend. And I was really, at the time, super into the punk scene, and I knew a lot of kind of vegetarians and vegans through that. So it seemed kind of like a normal thing. I didn't put too much thought into it outside of, like, you know, I hear it's better for the environment, and why would I hurt animals if I don't need to? But I wasn't very educated on the issues, so that's why I just kind of slowly started phasing it out, trying it. You know, my girlfriend at the time was doing it, so I was like, oh, might as well. And then it just kind of became habit and stuck. And then it wasn't until college when I read more of Peter Singer's books and started educating myself online and watching videos of factory farming that I realized how, you know, how little I knew, went vegan and started getting involved in activism at my college.
Yeah, and that's the last question. You made a tremendous step towards activism to make this your life's mission. When did you have an epiphany that that's what you wanted to do, or did it just kind of happen in little
yeah.
steps?
Yeah. So I would say, like I said, Peter Singer's work was really influential to me, and I definitely kind of think in that utilitarian kind of way. So I always knew that I wanted to be involved in campaigns, in politics, or some kind of, you know, political work, which I kind of would consider this to be as well. So I studied political communication at college. And I was planning on going into kind of mainstream party politics, trying to kind of change the world from that avenue. But I got pretty burned out on that, working on campaigns, realizing that it wasn't really the atmosphere that I thrived in. You know, I didn't find that the folks I was working with kind of shared my same vision, where it was kind of like working within the system to make the world a better place. It was a lot more about kind of petty politics and, like, advancing your career and that kind of thing. So I decided to move into the nonprofit sector, and that's how I found – that's how I connected with Nick at the Humane League. And for a long time, I had been doing personal vegan activism and animal activism, but I never had thought that this was something that was that could potentially be, like, a career or a way to spend my life outside of, you know, trying to support it through my other work. And then I connected with, an amazing world of animal activists. And there's a few people, like John Camp, especially, from Vegan Outreach, the Million Leaflet Man. I spent a summer in a car with him, traveling on Warped Tour with him and Nick from the Humane League and Aaron and Kate from the Humane League. And a lot of people who really showed me that you can make a life out of this, and they inspired me really to dedicate the rest of my life to doing this work for animals.
Great. Well, you know, I want to say that I hope you don't need to do this for the rest of your life, but like you said, things happen in small steps, and I think you'll be busy for a long time.
Yeah, I look forward to an early retirement.
Great. Well, just one last thing. What's the Humane League working on now?
Sure. So we're continuing to campaign against some of these dining companies. We have a list of the top 50. So I think we've gone through 8 or 9 of them now, and we're going to wrap that up. We've got a few secret plans of some big companies and corporations that we're going to be going after in the coming year. But some really exciting news is, first of all, we're opening 2 new grassroots locations. So we're going to be in San Diego and Denver. And we're also hiring a corporate campaigner in Mexico. So we're going to be campaigning against some of the companies that we've defeated here in the U.S. using the exact same tactics, but in Mexico. So we're really excited to start doing some international work.
Right. That's great, because everything's connected, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, Dave, it was great talking to you, and I didn't know much about the Humane League, and now I know a little bit more, and I'm glad you're out there.
Yeah, thanks so much for the opportunity to chat about our work. It was really nice.
Okay, so people just need to visit thehumaneleague.com.
That's right. Yep, absolutely.
Okay, great. Well, thank you, and I hope you really develop the true meaning of the word humane.
Thank you so much. All right, I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
Great. Bye.
Great. Well, that was David Komen, Heidi, of the Humane League. And let's take a little break, and then we're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about vegan tapas.